Well, best case scenario is that they pass the farm bill before the end of the year, and that way the taxpayers will save between $23 to $35 billion over the next 5 years. That's what the difference is between the House and the Senate version right now. So I would imagine once they go into conference committee that the dollar amount will end up somewhere in the middle of those $2. Worst case scenario is probably an extension of 1 year to, you know, waste some time, basically. The White House and Congress and the Senate really didn't change from when the bills were written. So there isn't going to be a lot of difference of opinions amongst our leaders out there. So there's really no reason to go with an extension, which in that that scenario, it's going to cost taxpayers $70 or $80 million just for that 1 year extension, versus if they would pass the bill and get it to the president before the end of the year, there'd be additional savings.
Now, I know that's one thing that Colin Peterson in particular has vehemently opposed, any extension. He wants the new farm bill pushed through. Do you think he'll be successful in that?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with the fiscal cliff debate. If they could get their stuff together and get that worked out here in the next week or so, that would give Congress enough time to put the farm bill on the floor and debate it, and then they would have time to go into the conference committee and get it on the president's desk. But, you know, a lot of it's just going to depend on if they can become the leaders that they were elected to be to get on about this fiscal cliff debate and get that taken care of.
When you look at the Senate version and the House Ag Committee version, are you happy? Is this the best we can do with the farm bill, or would you like to see some changes in this?
Well, the only thing that we would like to see different on the House side is they don't have a package in there that ties conservation practices to any payments that would come from the federal government, whether it's for direct payments, insurance, subsidies, or disaster payments. And, you know, as a farmer, I guess I feel an obligation to the taxpayer that there should be some tie to whether or not I receive those payments. And conservation practices are something that every farmer practices. But in tough years when corn prices are higher, it's easy for farmers to just forget about those conservation practices that they've been practicing and put corn in or soybeans in fence row to fence row, and then you have possibilities of erosion either through wind or soil losses. So, you know, there's that component is what we'd like to see on the House side. The Senate side has that in there already, so that's one of our main issues that we'd like to see changed on the House side.
Given what corn prices have done and what supplies look like, there has been a growing push to allow more acres to come out of CRP. Your thoughts on that?
Well, there are some acres that probably could come out rather easily, because there is some ground that is not highly erodible that is in CRP right now. But there is a lot of land down here in southwest Wisconsin anyway that, you know, when you get a slope of 8-10%, it doesn't take long for the water to build up and wash quite a bit of soil away in a short time.
When you think back when the 2008 Farm Bill was being put together, and of course Congressman Ron Kind had an alternative Farm Bill proposal that was very wildlife and conservation oriented, we have really swung completely away from that. What happened to create that, and do you think we can get back to that at some point?
Well, I think what really swung it was the higher corn prices and higher soybean prices. Farmers were able to generate more than enough income per acre off of those crops, and so at that point in time, it just wasn't feasible to put some of the practices in place, such as strip cropping or contour stripping like we see down here in this country, to make sure that the ground is preserved on a daily basis.
Your thoughts on the Dairy Security Act?
Well, we would like to see a little bit different style of supply management than what's been proposed. You know, the supply management that is in the bill basically has a running baseline. And if you're going to have true supply management, you have to have something that's going to make sure that farmers can't go way and above beyond 1 year and pay a little bit of a penalty and then be able to go with that baseline from then on. In order to justify exceptional growth anyway. We need to make sure that there's a need for that product. And then we'd really like to see the pricing mechanism, which would require the federal order system to be reopened. That pricing mechanism really should reflect a lot more what the consumer is paying for dairy products. Currently, the farmer is getting only about 25-26% of what the consumer is paying, versus back in the 1980s, farmers were receiving between 43-44% of what the consumer is paying. And so over the years, the farmers have been getting less and less of what the consumer is paying, and the middlemen are getting more and more. And that's quite evident with some of the year or the quarterly earnings that some of the large dairy processors and marketers such as Kraft and Dean Foods are showing, 20-25% quarterly earnings, whereas farmers are struggling just to make ends meet on a daily basis.
Is supply management essential to make any program successful?
Well, if you want to have a decent price paid back to the farmers, that's an essential part of the program. If you take, for instance, what the organic industry did back in 2009 with the financial crisis that we've seen, and they've seen that the consumer wasn't going to buy as much product. So they told their members right out front that, for the next year, we're going to only accept 93% of your milk, or that's what you're going to get paid for. If you want to produce more, you can, but you just won't be getting paid for it. And it seemed to work rather well for the organic community, and I would think that it could be adopted with the conventional side, too.
What can producers do, farmers do, to urge Congress to take action on the fiscal cliff and the farm bill prior to the end of the year here?
Well, I think it's phone calls, lots of letters. A lot of congressmen have Facebook pages, tweet accounts, and I think it's just going to take a lot of daily talks with them or through one of those mechanisms to try to get them to move on it. And there's plenty of time to get both things done if they stop wasting their time bickering about what the other party is doing, and let's just sit down and negotiate a deal that's going to be good for the country, and I think it's going to be somewhere in between what both sides want. But they just need to sit down and get rid of this political bickering that's going on out there and do it. And consumers and farmers alike both need to voice their opinions on the farm bill, because that is something that affects everybody that eats food. And if we continue to chase farmers off the land the way we have over the last three or four decades here, what's going to happen with American food supply in the next half a century or quarter century?
There are some, Ron Johnson among them, who are advocating separating nutrition programs out of the ag bill, out of the farm bill. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I disagree with it wholeheartedly. Both the farm bill and the food nutrition programs deal with food that's produced on our lands, and they're both both of those titles are handled through the Department of Ag. And I guess I'd put out the comparison: if you're going to split those two bills, then maybe we should split the Defense Department's bill into the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines and the Army, and make them all fight amongst each other for the dollars they want, too. It just makes sense to keep the Farm Bill and the nutrition program together, because one department of the government is what oversees those programs. And if you're going to start separating programs that are run by one department, then maybe every department should look at that to be a cost savings, which, in the end, I really don't think it'll be a cost savings to split those two programs, because you're going to have to have another department set up in order to run one of those programs.